Normally it's 7:35 on Monday mornings. We talk with the folks from the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, but a little bit of scheduling snag right there, so we push back by an hour. I welcome back to the show Beverly Haydel. Beverly, thanks for being flexible and getting back on this morning.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Happy to be with you.
Very happy to have you on, all things considered, not just to be talking about the upcoming legislative session, which I'm hoping we'll get to, but there are more pressing items right now. I got to lean on you a little bit for a little bit of basketball knowledge, a little bit of basketball insight. So before founding Sequitur Consulting, Beverly played herself a little ball. You've known and Kim Mulkey for years. Let's talk a little bit about the game. You were there.
I was there for Friday and yesterday's championship game.
It was
absolutely the best college women's basketball game I've ever seen. And I think most other people in the stadium had to feel that way.
Okay. As a father of daughters, as an avid fan of women's college basketball, I feel like I'm biased in asking this, and I'm going to ask a former women's college basketball player, so I know you're biased as well. Are we looking at the possibility of the women's game being more popular this year than the men's game?
I mean, I'm interested to see the ratings for the Final Four after tonight's men's championship game. But what I do know is that the women's tournament this year, and I think that went all the way from the beginning of March Madness through the national championship game last night, broke every record that they had ever previously set in terms of both attendance at the games and viewership. I really think we're going to look back on this year and even look back just on what LSU did as a team and view this as a turning point for the sport, for women's basketball.
I kind of agree with that, and we're going to walk down the path of the characters involved in just a second. Let's walk down it now. What made this so special? What got so many eyes on this game, on this Final Four?
Well, I mean, I think it was a combination of a couple things. I mean, first of all, you know, you had Caitlin Clark. Everyone saw her in action last night, who is a phenomenal player, had been breaking records for the entire year in terms of just her impact on the game, her scoring, the number of points she was putting up every game. So I think, you know, getting people interested in the tournament, I think she had a lot to do with it. But I also just think that, like, the women's game kind of took on this, like, new persona this year, and LSU was a big part of that. We had, you know, a lot of players on the LSU team, including the coach, who have big personalities. They started to kind of create their own brand. And, of course, NIL plays into that somewhat. But I think it was just a group of exciting teams to watch this year.
The personalities, the NIL angle is an added angle to that, because – personality-wise, I wouldn't have gotten to know Simone Augustus or Sylvia Fowles by driving up and down any of the streets of Baton Rouge past the Raising Cane's and seeing their face right in front of me, or past the Gordon McKernan billboard and seeing their face in front of me. Like, NIL puts their faces out there outside of the 40 minutes that they're playing ball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, between NIL and then just, like, social media in general, I think you're starting to see the individual brand of certain players really take off.
Yeah.
And I mean, LSU has, you know, incredible players this year, and we got Flage, who's got her own rapping career. We got Angel, who's Bayou Barbie. She's created her own brand. You had a really unique story in Alexis Morris and sort of her history and getting a second chance here at LSU. So I think we're going to see more of that going forward, not just from LSU, but from other teams.
The controversy, and I'm air quoting that, the controversy with Angel Reese after the game, your immediate takeaway was what?
So I guess two things. First of all, I was there in person, so it's hard to know what it looked like on TV. Mm-hmm. But if you were there in person, you saw that Caitlin Clark did a lot of sort of, she was in the ref's face throughout the game. She really was sort of agitating during that game. And I don't know that that really came across on TV. I know she got the technical and people probably saw that.
Yeah.
But when I talked to other people who watched it on TV, I don't think it was quite that apparent. But look, I mean, and Kim has said this publicly several times, I think, to the media, Angel is a little bit of a trash talker, right? Like, she's very passionate player, and she likes to get her teammates fired up. She likes to get inside the head of her opponent. And so that's part of what gets her going and why she's so great. I personally don't think she crossed the line last night, and I will be interested to see what Kim says, but I doubt she thinks she crossed that line. I know that, you know, Kim demands professionalism and good sportsmanlike conduct out of all of her players. Mm-hmm. And so if she ever sees that one of her players is crossing a line, she will address it right then and there. But I really don't think Angel crossed the line. And I mean, I know, you know, I've seen in social media, Caitlin Clark did that in other games. And so I think we need to hold everybody to the same standard.
We're talking with Beverly Haydel. We'll get to the session in a little bit, hopefully. If not, there's so much to unpack from last night, Beverly. Okay, so the technical foul. I'm glad you brought this up because we're at home, we're subject to what the camera is going to show us. But when you could see the whole court, when you could see what's going on off camera, you could see Caitlin Clark in the ref's face. Now, when you see Caitlin Clark throw the ball away, which is what she did, which is a delay of game, which is a technical foul. Do you think if she's not in the ref's face all night long, she gets teed up right there? Or would that be overlooked in that situation?
I think there was build up to that moment. I don't think they would have teed her up if that was the first thing that had happened during the game. Mm-hmm. But she had been in their face, and there had been a previous warning of delay of game. And so I think they really saw that as a tipping point and wanting to send her a signal, this is not acceptable.
And the announcers on that were just, and I know you were in the stadium, so you couldn't you hear the announcer was like, she said nothing. She didn't say a word. Look right here. She doesn't, her mouth doesn't move. It wasn't about that moment. It was about the buildup to it.
That's right. That's right. She had exchanged words with the ref leading up to that moment.
Let's move over to the actual play itself. Was Kim Mulkey doing something different in the tournament that she was not doing during the regular season when it comes to LSU's offense, specifically last night? Because those numbers, I mean, percentage-wise, those numbers were irreplaceable. But placement of players on the floor, where movement was going, was LSU doing something different last night?
I mean, I didn't notice anything particularly different in terms of execution, but I think it just had a lot to do with those bench players really stepping up. And I think, you know, heading into the tournament, I think Kim's smart enough to know that you can't play all the games it takes to get to the national championship relying solely on your starting five.
Right.
So I'm sure that she sat them down and said, you know, this has got to be a team effort, and we got to have rebounds, points off the board, creating turnovers from everyone. And I mean, what Jasmine Carson did last night, I mean, LaDasia Williams was incredible throughout the tournament. I think she came through huge, especially in the last 2 to 3 games. So I really think those girls just knew that they had to step up, and they did it.
We're talking with Beverly Haydel. One more on the game from last. Well, okay. So I saw Angel on the post a lot more than at the free throw line last night. I noticed during the regular season that feed from the wing would go to Angel at the free throw line and let her create from there. She was on the post a lot more, letting LaDasia create from the free throw line and let Angel do what she do, which is pull down offensive boards.
Offensive boards, yeah. And also, I think, you know, one sort of strategy that it appeared that Kim was trying to execute on last night was getting the Iowa girls in foul trouble early, which worked. And so, you know, Angel is a great free throw shooter. She's incredible at getting the ball on the block. And even if there's 3 people around her, just taking it strong to the rim. And a lot of times she makes it. And when she doesn't, she usually draws a foul. And so I think that was definitely part of the strategy, and they executed it perfectly.
Trash talk has always been a part of the game. You played at Harvard. I have this visual image of trash talk at Harvard being a lot like the bar scene from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, I kind of think the trash talk in the Ivy League play was probably not to the level of the trash talk that was going on out there last night in the national championship game.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly did a little bit of trash talking. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't even take words. It's just the stare down or something you do without even saying anything that really gets in the other team's head. And I saw a little bit of that last night, too.
Last one before we move on to the business for next week with the legislative session, and that is on Kim Mulkey's wardrobe. As we go into the offseason to start next year, does she reset and go back to the beginning, or does she continue to push the envelope and pick up where she left off? I feel like if she picks up where she left off, she's going to run out of options.
Oh, I don't think she's going to run out of options. I think people are coming out of the woodwork to make her clothes. But it will be interesting to see if she sticks with the sparkle theme next season or tries something different. I mean, I thought her outfit last night was just absolutely spot on. And I just love the fact that she's brought that additional flair to the women's game. And I think it's great. So we'll see what happens next season. I have not talked to her about the wardrobe plans going forward.
Yeah. If you pick up where you left, like, she's got to go back to like a Mr. Rogers sweater vest at some point. Just start over.
Something that tells me that's not where we're headed, Brian.
No, I know. I'm a conservative. I move forward with caution. We got a couple minutes left with Beverly Haydel. All right. Eyes moving over to the state capitol for next week. From your perspective, not just with Sequitur, but with LABI and with the LA23 plan, what are you going to keep an eye on the early parts of the session next week?
Yeah, I guess, I've done a kind of first pass review of a lot of the bills that have been filed. And to me, I think there's three real big topics that are going to get a lot of attention this session. Of course, there will be others, but from my perspective, tax reform, obviously, and I know Jack talked about that in your last hour. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that we are going to see major tax reform this session, just given the political dynamic with election season, a new governor coming in next year. But I do think, and I'm hopeful, that we will have a lot of really thoughtful, productive conversations, digging into the data to look at what are our options, and what are our options that we could do tax reform in a smart, fiscally conservative way to make our state more competitive, but also make sure that, you know, we've got adequate funding to provide the services that we need to everyone in the state. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching all the nuances of tax reform discussions. And you've talked a little bit over the past couple of weeks on this show about insurance reform.
Yes.
I think it's hard to underestimate the crisis that's happening right now in Louisiana as it relates to property and casualty insurance. I mean, I have my own personal experience just with my homeowner's insurer up and leaving the state 2 years ago, switched to another policy, renewed for a year, and got the bill this year. It's 40% higher than it was last year. So if it's happening to me, I can only imagine what's happening to everyone else across the state. And that includes business owners who are out there trying to get loans and do development. So if we don't figure out a solution to what's going on in the insurance market, I think you're going to start to see the ripple effects throughout our economy and our state, and it's not good. So we'll be paying a lot of attention to that. And then I guess the third thing is around criminal justice reform. That won't necessarily be something that, you know, is lobby's top issue, but it is going to be an issue for lobby and other business groups, because I think in the past, we've sort of thought of criminal justice issues and crime as something of its own issue in its own silo. But we're starting to see crime impact economic development and the success of businesses and their willingness to move to places like New Orleans and Baton Rouge and grow their business. And so I think I've already seen a ton of really good bills on the criminal justice front. Debbie Villio, prosecutor, she's got a lot of good bills. John Stefanski has a fentanyl bill. I think maybe Sharon Hewitt also has a bill related to fentanyl penalties. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something to watch as well, and I think we'll see some movement there.
The criminal justice reform, I think, is going to be an interesting one to see play out, because when it comes to punishing criminals and what's the state's role in that, there's going to be a whole lot of talk about keeping spending under wraps in every other form and fashion. But when it comes to criminal justice reform, we're going to be looking to add new ongoing spending in order to get this done from the state's perspective. I don't know how you want safety. You want safety,
right?
But you don't want to balk at cost for the safety either. But there are dollars that would otherwise go to other programs if not being funneled towards this.
No, that's right. And I think there will be a lot of sort of balancing between what does the state fund versus what do locals fund as it relates to criminal justice and enforcement. And so, look, I think funding is a big part of it, right? We need the state to provide funding support to local communities to make sure they have the resources to properly combat crime in their region. But some of it is not related to funding. Some of it's related to, sentencing rules, more transparency in the judicial system to make sure that, you know, we have an elected judiciary. So we want to make sure that when voters are out there deciding who they're going to vote for judge, they understand the positions that these judges have taken and what they have done as it relates to violent crime in particular. And so I think you're going to see a whole slew of bills on criminal justice. Some of them will be funding, but others will not be.
She is Beverly Haydel. We always appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you once the session's up and running.
Great. Looking forward to it, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you. We